Good morning. It's nice to be here, even in our distant state. I'm Chris Meyer, and today I'm going to share about the history, the purpose, and the mission of Everence. I'll also talk about my role at Everence and how I came into it. Thank you for sharing the scripture, Rachel. I see these verses as stressing mutual responsibility within the church. They have long served as a scriptural foundation for mutual aid practices within Anabaptist circles. Everence is a not-for-profit organization and the stewardship agency of Mennonite Church USA. Many of you at Millersburg Mennonite have connections to Everence. Some work or have worked there. Others are or have been board members or congregational advocates. And many of you are Everence members and use Everence products and services. Everence's mission is to help people and institutions integrate their faith and values into their financial decisions to accomplish their stewardship goals. Everence serves individuals, organizations, and congregations that share the stewardship principle that all we are and all we have is from God. A historical biblical belief of Mennonite and Anabaptist Christians. Everence products and services are open to anyone who is interested in practicing stewardship that aligns with these principles and our founding values. Although it is not a requirement for Everence membership, many members belong to denominations that have historic roots or relationships with the Anabaptist faith community. A few of them include Mennonite Church USA, the Brethren in Christ, Church of the Brethren, the Conservative Mennonite Conference, Friends General Conference, Friends General Meeting, and the Missionary Church and Old Order Amish. Everence today offers many different products and services to help fulfill its members' needs. Banking is one. Everence Credit Union provides banking services such as savings and checking accounts, loans, and credit cards. There's an insurance piece to Everence as well, life insurance, home insurance, health insurance, such as Medicare supplement products, and pools. Everence can help small businesses pool their funds to provide health insurance for their employees. Financial planning is another core aspect of the service that Everence provides. Everence has dozens of professional financial advisors trained to help clients integrate their faith into their financial plans to provide for future needs. There are many investments that Everence has under management through Praxis Mutual Funds or the Everence Trust Company. Everence helps to manage and get a return on investments while investing in responsible ways, also on behalf of the significant pools of insurance reserves that are there to help fulfill claims. Charitable giving is another significant aspect of what Everence helps members do. The Everence Foundation provides a structure through which members can direct their resources to support their preferred charities. Another aspect of Everence is stewardship education. It helps provide information and learning to members of Everence and in Everence communities to help increase financial awareness among congregations. Today, there are over 78,000 Everence members in all 50 states. About 20 field offices, hundreds of congregational advocates, more than 350 employees, and about $5 billion in assets under management. As a not-for-profit organization, money that's left after Everence covers its operating expenses isn't distributed as profits or dividends to shareholders. Rather, it's used for further investment in the company and to help those in need within its members' communities. This happens primarily through the Everence Sharing Fund. The Sharing Fund helps thousands of families each year through matching grants. It distributes millions of dollars annually through these grants to help people meet their basic needs. Some examples of this include supporting local food pantries, helping in-need families pay bills such as a heating bill in the winter, and helping members pay unexpected medical expenses. Underpinning all that Everence does is the question, How can we provide our members with the products and services that they need in today's world while remaining faithful to our core values and stewardship principles? That's the question that the organization has continued to ask since the very beginning. While Everence today is a complex organization integrated into the modern financial system, it started from quite humble beginnings. Last year, in 2020, Everence celebrated its 75th anniversary. This momentous occasion provided an opportunity to look back at its rich history. As part of this process, Everence commissioned John D. Roth, professor of history at Goshen College, to write a book about the organization from its roots until the present day. John is certainly familiar to many of you here at Millersburg Mennonite, with strong family and friend connections to this congregation, and I won't name them all because I'm sure I would miss some. I also have a personal connection to John. I was a history major at Goshen College, took many of John's classes, and he served as my academic advisor. I enjoyed reading his book, titled Where the People Go, Community Generosity and the Story of Everence. It's right here. I would recommend it to all readers, but especially those of you who are curious about the tension between strongly held beliefs and ideals and compelling practical considerations, and how that plays out in the life of an institution. I was familiar with the general history of Everence, but this book substantially added to my knowledge. And I want to describe a little bit about the history of Everence, because I think it really pertains to the Anabaptist Anabaptist identity of mutual aid this morning. And I will borrow much of what I will say about Everence's history from John's book. I will note that Everence's name from 1945 to 2010 was Mennonite Mutual Aid. In the later years of that time period, it was often shortened to just MMA. In 2010, Mennonite Mutual Aid sought a name change for several reasons. One was that, in contrast to its early years, the MMA membership base had extended far beyond Mennonite denominations, and the name was antiquated. When I speak today, if I mention Mennonite Mutual Aid, MMA, or Everence, I'm referring to the same organization. In early Anabaptist communities in Europe, economic sharing was a core conviction. Anabaptists argued that Christian faith could not be separated from economic actions of buying, selling, borrowing, loaning, possessing, and sharing. They took seriously Christ's command not to lay up treasures on earth or end having goods in common. Those are some verses from Acts that we are probably familiar with. The desire to bear one another's burdens, as we read from Galatians this morning, through practices of mutual aid was strong. Mutual aid was practiced almost solely at the congregational level. Anabaptists didn't cooperate at a regional or national level, due in large part to persecution and the unsanctioned nature of early Anabaptist churches. For instance, in contrast to other Christian traditions like the Catholics and Lutherans, who had national assemblies, institutions such as seminaries and mission boards, Anabaptist Mennonites only had a handful of confessional documents and a few distinct faith traditions like adult baptism and non-resistance in common with one another. A Mennonite in Amsterdam had virtually no church connection to a Mennonite in Switzerland. This reality carried over to Anabaptists who migrated to North America. Since there weren't institutions bringing Anabaptists in disparate locations together, the church world for members was virtually all on a local level in tight-knit communities. Mutual aid was generally limited to spontaneous acts of sharing and charity as members had need. It wasn't necessarily an efficient way to address the practical needs of the congregation, and there was no structure in place to help those outside of the congregation. This tradition of decentralized and unconnected communities of Anabaptists began to be challenged by the middle of the 19th century. By the beginning of the 1860s, Mennonites in North America began to adopt new forms of organization. National publications were started, connecting the various corners of the Mennonite world. Regional conferences sprung up. Colleges and universities and seminaries were eventually founded, and mission and relief organizations were begun. Mutual aid societies were created to provide a more formal approach to addressing people's economic needs and began to replace some of the ad hoc and impulsive forms of sharing in Mennonite communities. For instance, if a church member's house burned down and they were in a mutual aid program, the cost of rebuilding would be automatically borne by the whole group within clearly defined terms. This could replace the more random acts of charity that had traditionally been practiced. Mutual aid societies made bearing each other's burdens more efficient, and some could argue fairer. Some of the earliest mutual aid organizations included the Sonnenberg Mutual Insurance Association of Downton, Ohio, the Amish Mennonite Storm and Fire Aid Union based in Ontario, and the Mennonite Mutual Aid Society among General Conference Mennonites in Bluffton, Ohio. These were all formed in the late 1850s or 1860s. By 1920, there were nearly 40 Mennonite and Amish Mennonite mutual aid societies. Nearly all of them had small levels of capitalization and modest fees for their participants. However, each of these efforts carried some controversy. They were institutional forms of sharing, with boards, constitutions, and bylaws. While deeply religious, these organizations were also not directly controlled by congregations or ministers, but by separate boards. Some saw this as potentially challenging the authority of the church. There were also persistent theological and scriptural considerations. If we're not to store up treasures on earth, and everything is ultimately God's, why do we need formal mutual aid plans, which might seem like insurance? Shouldn't we depend on God rather than human-created institutions to provide for our security? These tensions around wealth and security in various forms have been part of Anabaptist history since the beginning. The story of Everence most specifically begins in 1935. The Great Depression had brought financial hardship and suffering to millions of Americans, and the government was ready to act. That year, the U.S. Congress passed the Social Security Act of 1935. For the first time, the federal government took on responsibility for the economic security of senior citizens, the unemployed, dependent children, and people with disabilities. Mennonite leaders had closely followed the developments of this act and were very concerned about its outcome. There was widespread acknowledgement among them that the problems that Social Security aimed to address were real and significant, and that the existing mutual aid societies were inadequate to address such comprehensive issues. But the thinking of these leaders was that the church, rather than the government, should provide this kind of support to their members. They feared that if the church didn't provide its own response to the economic challenges its members were facing, federal programs would be increasingly used by members and lead to the church becoming less relevant. Almost immediately, there were calls for the Mennonite church to develop an alternative plan. Leaders of the Pacific Coast Conference and the Ohio Mennonite and Eastern Amish Mennonite Conference were at the forefront of the call to create an alternative plan. A stewardship study committee was formed to propose a plan for an organization that would, quote, provide for necessary medical care, hospital bills, funeral expenses, etc., of the worthy poor of the church. However, the committee's first report was ambivalent. It noted that there was genuine need among church members for a saving system, aid for accident, storm or fire, relief in time of misfortune, and aid in time of sickness and burial. But despite that acknowledgement, there was significant trepidation, particularly about insurance. Many Mennonites felt that while mutual aid reflected a covenant trust in God and one's community, insurance was based on legal contracts, statistical calculations, and premiums. It was too worldly and could ultimately lead members away from God and the church. The Stewardship Study Committee couldn't find a clear way to accomplish its purpose while avoiding the taboo of insurance, so it recommended further study. As it turned out, moving from general observations and encouragements to the implementation of an actual church-wide mutual aid program proved to be difficult. Various committees were formed, proposals made, and yet there was ultimately inaction. In 1941, 6 years after it was formed, the Stewardship Study Committee worried that, in its words, quote, unless the church provides some organized medium of fellowship through which mutual burdens of fire, storm, accident, hospitalization, and death can be borne, more and more of our members will seek such fellowship with other groups. Indeed, Mennonites were adjusting to new economic realities, even if the church wasn't, and some were taking matters into their own hands. Finally, World War II pushed Mennonite leadership to action. Many Mennonite men were serving in civilian public service camps, or CPS, as conscientious objectors, and by 1943, with the outcome of the war fairly clear, leaders began to worry about the economic rehabilitation of young men when they eventually returned from their CPS service. That year, a group of Mennonite leaders gathered, determined to move the work of the Stewardship Study Committee forward. Ori Miller, an influential church leader from Akron, Pennsylvania, made a proposal. According to notes from the meeting, he said, quote, "Our old and century-long Mennonite ways of living are breaking up, and new patterns are being set. The war is hastening this process and adding new elements through CPS. In this changing situation, the church means to go along with its members and to help them wherever in conscience they need to go and can and need to go. We need to create a board, and we'll call it Mennonite Mutual Aid." The other leaders quickly supported the proposal and began to persuade other Mennonite entities to support it. Mennonite Mutual Aid opened for business in 1945. Its first offering was low-interest loans to these young men returning from their CPS assignments. Other products and services were quickly added, fueled by strong demand. The reality is that many Mennonites had been quietly using various financial and insurance products for years, despite their disapproval by the church. So, when church-sanctioned options became available, these Mennonites, and many others, were eager to participate with little hesitation. Medical plans, various types of insurance, and even auto insurance product lines were established. MMA was following where the people go and trying to provide products and services that serve their needs while integrating Anabaptist values into them. The continuous tension apparent throughout MMA's history has been between the pull of the ways of the world and the desire to be faithful to scripture and social ethics gleaned from the New Testament. I'm going to share a little more about the investment side of Vivrance, because that's where I work. We believe the Bible instructs us to use God's gifts productively, and second, that we care for others. When you apply this concept to the gift of wealth, our money, it means we need to be just as concerned about the impact of our investments as we are about the return we receive on our investments. Vivrance's first investments were in the loans to CPS workers. As membership grew, insurance products were added, and insurance reserve funds, which are essentially pools of money on hand to fulfill claims and regulatory requirements, needed to be invested and managed. Over time, retirement and investment accounts for individuals and institutions were added. As our services grew, our understanding of how to shape the social impact of our investments also grew. For the first time in several decades, that understanding was limited to avoiding certain industries like tobacco and alcohol and military contracting with our investments. Then in the early 1990s, MMA developed the Praxis Mutual Funds and our stewardship investing process, which is our approach to faith-based, socially responsible investing. Stewardship investing is our answer to the biblical instructions on wealth. It holds in tension a responsibility for the productive use of financial resources on one hand, and on the other, a deep-seated concern for the individuals, communities, and environments that are impacted by our investment choices. It's composed of three fundamental pillars. First is company selections. This includes our various values and social screens that we use to exclude companies that we believe are antithetical to our values. It also includes positive investments, investing in things that we believe help the world become a better place. Shareholder advocacy is another fundamental pillar of stewardship investing, and it means using the power of our investments to do good, working with the companies that we own shares in to transform them through direct dialogue, challenging harmful activities, and encouraging positive social change. Voting our shares at company meetings in a way that reflects our values is another aspect of shareholder advocacy. Community development investing is the third pillar of stewardship investing. It means that we invest a portion of our funds in below market rate investments that have a very high social impact, empowering disadvantaged individuals and communities. Through all these three pillars of stewardship investing, we seek to reflect the shared values of our membership. I've been at Everence for 15 years now. I want to provide a little background on what I do and why I came to work here. Since my early years, I've aspired to work towards justice and sustainability in the world. My motivation stems in part from trepidation about the future of the planet and from my desire to seek shalom, which I define as right relationships between humans, God, and the earth. Through influential authors and classes and peers, as well as significant personal and spiritual reflection, my vision for change emerged during my college years. I was keen to learn about complex issues and determine the most productive path towards changing our systems. I wanted to address the root causes of the world's problems, not just deal with the effects. I determined that the greatest power, for good or bad, seemed to rest in the financial world, and I wanted to maximize the amount of systemic change that I could accomplish using my skill set within our existing economic system. I originally learned about shareholder advocacy as a student at Goshen College. My ethics and morality class took a field trip to Everence for a half a day and listened to several speakers talk about ethics in healthcare, advertising, and investing. Mark Regeer, who established Everence's stewardship investing program, spoke about how they engaged companies they owned shares in order to change policies. I was intrigued with this use of power to promote sustainability from within our financial system. After college, I did a year of volunteer work in Colorado through Mennonite Voluntary Service. While I was there, I learned of a job opportunity centered on shareholder advocacy at Everence. The description seemed to fit my skills and interests like a glove. I applied and I got the job, and when my volunteer term ended, I moved to Goshen and started my work. I do many things at Everence, but I want to share a few examples of shareholder advocacy since it's one of the primary things I do and what I'm most passionate about. We follow a shareholder advocacy plan that guides our work. Our two major themes right now are creation care, and especially climate change, and addressing instances of modern slavery. We collaborate with many faith-based and values-aligned investors to engage corporations. Many of these peers belong to the Interfaith Center on Corporate Responsibility. Partnering allows us to increase the breadth and the depth of our engagements. One aspect of our climate change advocacy is focused on utilities. The power sector in the United States accounts for 30% of all the greenhouse gas emissions, and turning the utilities into on a path towards a low carbon economy encompasses some really low hanging fruit. And so we're trying to push companies that maybe getting a majority of their electricity from thermal coal power plants to at least going to natural gas, if not going to renewables altogether. And we've engaged companies including Duke Energy, Southern Company, and American Electric Power on this. We also engage a utility called NiSource. For the past 5 years, I've led a shareholder engagement with NiSource focused on greenhouse gas emissions reductions, climate change scenario planning, and a transition to renewable energy. In part due to this engagement, NiSource announced a plan to retire all its coal generation plants by 2028, which will reduce its carbon emissions by 90%. The capacity will be largely replaced with renewable energy, and the new wind and solar installations will effectively double Indiana's renewable energy capacity. The changes will take place within the Northern Indiana Public Service Company, which is NiSource's electric subsidiary. NIPSCO serves nearly 500,000 customers in Northern Indiana, including the Everence Home Office, Goshen College, and the City of Goshen. Another example of shareholder advocacy involves a dialogue that I was part of just a couple weeks ago. I joined with other investor members of the Interfaith Center on Corporate Responsibility for a conversation with Delta Airlines on the company's continued efforts to promote human rights and combat human trafficking. The engagement also touched on Delta's response to COVID-19 and its strategy to address racial equality. In 2020, Delta had issued a comprehensive anti-slavery and anti-human trafficking statement that outlined its commitment to addressing human trafficking and provided news on its recent activities. Our investor group centered the dialogue on this document and built on previous engagements with the company. Human trafficking is also known as modern slavery, and it describes the coercion and displacement of millions of people worldwide, nearly 40 million, according to the International Labor Organization. It includes people who are forced into involuntary servitude, debt bondage, commercial sex acts, or forced marriage. Human trafficking victims are often transported far from their homes or their countries of origin, and often they're on airlines. Delta has been a leading force in addressing human trafficking within the airline industry, and I've taken part in many engagements with the company over the past decade. I've got many more shareholder advocacy examples and stories that I could mention, but I think I've at least illustrated the kind of change and the importance of it that can take place through engagement with companies. I hope my sharing this morning has given you a better understanding of Everence, its history, and its mission to meet the modern financial needs of its members while integrating faith and values into its products and services. If you'd like to learn more about Everence or have questions, feel free to reach out to me, to DJ McFadden, to Rhoda Mast, or David Miller about who are also good resources for Everence-related questions. Thank you for the opportunity to share.